Good morning, everyone. Hope the breakfast, hot breakfast, actually give you a very warm, fresh start of the day. I'm Candice Chung, the president of BChimps. On behalf of BChimps Board of Directors, thank you for joining us today. Working with a talented Board of Directors of the Society, we bring the very exciting education symposium to you. Before we get started, I would like to spend a few minutes on a brief overview of BChimps. You may or may not know, BChimps is a society with about 30 years history. First question today, who are the group of people that originally came up with the idea and founded BChimps? Anyone know? So actually, BChimps was originally founded by a group of CIOs from BC Health Authorities. When they wanted to talk to their frontline staff, and they try to create opportunity, and then come up this brilliant idea, and then that's how the society gets started. It's very interesting. We got some family blood with our health authorities. But I believe those original founders, they may never have thought about today. BChimps now is the premier nonprofit organization for everyone who is involved in managing health informatics in BC. I know we have quite a few past, present, and previous board members here already. So correct me if I'm wrong. I believe BChimps by this year should be 29 years old. Well, that's been a long time, but I still remember when I was 29 years old. yes, full of energy, so passionate, waiting to grow and ready for changes every day. And so does our 29 years old BChimps. So who are BChimps? And really here, you can see a quick snapshot of our membership. So by today, we have 312 regular members of BChimps, and then we have 1,165 active participants with the society. But you may say, I don't understand the number. What do those members mean? So by talking to some professional consulting companies, I actually learned inside of BC, we have about 3,000 health informatics professionals. Now those numbers make sense to you. So that means out of 3 health informatics professionals, there'll be more than one will be connected with BChimps. And actually, more than 10% of the health informatics professionals in BC are regular members of our society. And then if you look at the bar chart here, you can clearly see our membership has been consistently increasing, especially last 3 years. And then here is a demographic breakdown of our members. So about 37% of our members come from health authorities, and about 27% come from vendor side, and then the 90% involved into consulting services or in independent consultant. And then 4% of the members come from academics or research or students, and the 3% of the members come from other nonprofit organizations, our peer organizations, and then the rest is come from different areas. So now you know who are we? Who are Bishops? And then what do we do? So here is our mission. I just actually grabbed information from our website. So let's say our key mission is promote understanding of exchange of health information and technology in BC. Well, it's and more information you can see breakdown as below. But what does that mean? Again, so if you allow me to translate into my Chinglish, I see. I'll say, when you have a great idea or you have an amazing product and you wanted to share and you wanted to promote, where do you go? You come to Bishops. Remember, talk to Bishops. You are talking to one-third of the whole BC Health Informatics Society. If you want to make your voice heard, come to Bishops. We have leaders, decision makers, we have your peers, we have educators, we have researchers of BC Health Informatics. If you want them to hear you, come to us. If you are thinking about finding some talented expert in health informatics, or if you are thinking about having a change of your career, come to Bishops. The person who sits next to you may be your next client or your potential employer. Are you facing challenges in your project implementation? No surprise. Believe me, there is no IT project that is natural beauty. Our peers are facing the same challenges and frustrations as you do. So come to Bishops, share your stories and pains, work collaboratively. Let's establish some better practice together. So this is our mission. But how do we deliver? Bishops normally hosts two annual education symposiums through a year. And in between, we also have networking social sessions. And also for this year, we plan to offer more. So there will be more education series at regional level. So stay tuned. Bishops are going outside of Lower Mainland. We were going to interior area, island, and also even in the air. We are planning to have education module online to provide more accessible education event to cross the province. So let's talk about this year, the fiscal year of 2016-17. So far, I have to say it's been a remarkable year. We had a lot of great achievements and changes, good changes. So you can clearly see our membership increased 30% in last 10 months. And also we have 12 corporate level membership organizations with Bishops now. And annual sponsors, we had one annual sponsor, IBM, for years. And really appreciate their consistent support, but also feel sorry. It's kind of lonely. But look at now. We have five. We have five sponsors. Thank you so much for our lovely sponsors. And also, don't even have time to talk about too many partnership offers. You know, for this winter, we have too many big snow dumps in Vancouver. That's even not comparable compared to the sponsorship or partnership offers we're facing to now. So this is very exciting. And also, the most popular word for 2016 and 17 is sold out. Yes. Today's event, sold out. Our last year's... Woohoo! I know. It's amazing teamwork. Our last year's fall education session also sold out. And then the second annual networking breakfast in Kelowna sold out. And also the social event after today's conference at Francisco, can I say sold out? More than 80 people sign up. I think more people asking. So we are very popular. And now let's talk about the heroes behind the scene. So let me introduce the 2016 and 17 board of directors of BChamps. I have to say, what a beautiful team. Sorry. So first, let me introduce Kate Kepler, our past president. Ellen Agrias, our vice president. Anushka Primic Osma, our treasurer. Oh, Anushka's still out there. Yeah, you know, we're working board. We're standing on our feet. We just keep working. Anushka's role is our treasurer, who is overseeing our budget and financial planning, not only help with registration table. Bridget Mittler, director of education and the social event. Bridget, let everyone see you. Bridget is an amazing leader for all of our conference and events, and one of the big reasons why all the events have been sold out, and also the producer of today's big show. And then Jude Ribello, director of communication and engagement. Jude, please raise your hands. And all the emails, blasts, and also the conference programs you currently hold in your hand is a beautiful product from Jude. And then Susie Wisconsin, the director of membership. If you have any questions about membership, please feel free to go talk to Susie. And Tiffany Chui. Tiffany is our secretary. She provides operational support for the board team and also manages the volunteer programs. So if you're interested to be a volunteer for BChamps, go talk to our lovely Tiffany. Also, what I noticed is today we also have a few past present and also past board members here today with us. So please raise your hand or stand up, please. Let everyone see you. Please stand up. Rob, Shine, Corey, yeah. Ooh, this is our team. This is our team. That's why we're so amazing. I have to say, you may or may not know, you know, the board of directors of BChamps are a group of devoted volunteers. Without your incredible hard work, BChamps won't be here today. So on behalf of BChamps members, I thank you all for your amazing services and your generous contribution to the society. Thank you from my heart. Finally, I would like to thank our annual sponsors, IBM, McKinsey, CGI, Gravity, Cerner, and then thank you for our event sponsors, Novari, Dimensions Analysis, and Sierra Systems. Thank you so much for your continuous support to society. So this is a great society. Thanks for everyone for being part of it with us. And thank you so much for helping to make the past year so memorable. I invite you to join me in participating a more successful 2017. Thank you. Also, before we get started, I just want to quickly share some information. This event will take photos through the event and will be posted in the public media. So if you are not comfortable to share your picture in the public media, please talk to the about directors. Also,
I'm the photographer, you can just let me know.
Yes. And also, the whole session will be recorded. The audio files will be posted on the website after the event. Again, if you have any concerns, feel free to come talk to us. One more thing, I would like to introduce Paul Brownrigg, the Vice President of CST and Innovation from Vancouver Coastal Health. We are so honored to have Paul here today to be our guest facilitator. Paul comes with a huge background with tremendous experience in project management, change management, and also operational engineering and technical architecture services. He has experience not only within Canada, but also UK. Amazing Paul, outside of his crazy working life, he's a loving husband and dad, and with a passion of sailing and fishing. So if you have a chance, do ask him about the story of the 6-foot-long lean cod. That's a very interesting story.
Thank you, Candice. Good start to the day. Okay. Can everyone hear me okay? Is that right? Good at the back, sir. Thank you very much. So an awful lot of lies and fabrication about my loving family and everything else like that. And please don't ask me about the story of the lean cod. That was after 3 glasses of wine last night. So thank you all very much for coming. So who's from outside of BC? Just put your hands up. Wow. Welcome. Is anyone from outside of Canada? Where are you from?
Boston.
Boston. Welcome. Hope you get back across the border okay. Welcome to Canada. We're very welcoming here. Thank you very much. Yeah. So we're going to try very hard to stay on track, but as you hear, we've got a fantastic lineup of speakers today. And as you're listening to each of the speakers, they'll all bring their own flavor to this. So remember Candice. By the way, Candice didn't manage to give yourself a pat on the back, but I think we should all acknowledge the fact that Candice gives... We're all busy, but the amount of time that these people give to raising this conference and making it happen is quite incredible, and we really appreciate it. So thank you, Candice. The speakers that are coming today have put a lot of their own time into this. They will bring their own perspectives to information management and aspects around information management. I'd like you to think, as you're listening to them, what does this mean for priorities? What does it mean in terms of how we stretch the limited dollars that we have in healthcare? Are we doing the right thing in the right way? And you'll hear an awful lot of different perspectives. And how can we become more successful? They're all going to bring a slightly different perspective. But if you just think priorities, and please get engaged in the conference. When you ask a question, stand up. It helps to identify yourselves, and we'll be handing microphones out. But we really welcome participation. That's what makes Beecham so special. So with that, I just want to introduce you to Yoel Robins-Paradise. Yoel, where are you? Oh, sorry. You're gonna do the introduction? All right. Okay, I'll sit down. Thank you.
Pick me.
We're all really well rehearsed here.
Hi. Good morning, everybody. Thanks, Paul. That's great. We're very grateful to have you here today. I'll let you know that I have to use the glasses now, first time. I know, right? So I'm Kate Coulter. For those of you who don't know me, I'm past president of BChimps and also president of MediNet. And I'm very pleased to introduce our next speaker. I imagine this will be a pretty rousing session. So take it easy on him, I would suggest, so that we're all friends by lunchtime. He is the VP of Providence Healthcare Center, Clinical Systems Transformation and Lower Mainland Information Management. He's also been a really generous supporter of BChimps. You may remember that a year or two ago we started the concept of the guest facilitator, as Paul has just introduced, and Paul has got to do it twice, so we're going to get, you know, lots of good value out of that repeat performance. But our first presenter graciously offered to be our guinea pig, and his really thoughtful approach to the project, we didn't give him a lot of instruction. It was a bit of an experiment, but it really convinced us to continue that practice. We were saying last night at our welcome reception for our presenters that we spend a lot of time on the board, the working board, working on logistics, and it's really important to have somebody whose entire focus on the day is making sure that the conversation is developing appropriately, moving in the right direction, that everybody gets to participate. So thank you very much to Paul for doing that today. But our presenter is back again today now to talk to you about the CST project in Vancouver Coastal. We're very grateful for his continued support of BChimps. Please welcome Yoel Robins Paradise.
Good morning, everybody. Is that working? The microphone, you can hear me? It's an honor to be here. I know a lot of folks know a lot about this initiative, and some of you probably have a thing like, been there, done that. Do I really need to hear about CST more? On the other hand, probably a lot of you are not that familiar with the project. You've heard that it's a large, important project in some way, and you're interested to find out what's, quote-unquote, really going on with that initiative. Just by way of curiosity, how many folks in the room have a pretty good sense of what this project is about, the CST project? Wow, look around. That is probably three quarters of the room, which is great. It means also that I should probably go through these slides really quickly and really spend a lot of time with some open conversation. I think in this type of forum, it's a great opportunity for us to learn together. I believe actually the whole industry in some ways is at a crossroads. We have hearing every year about large, complicated initiatives that have trouble delivering in every industry, whether it's a dam project in a hydro environment or a large, complex electronic health record. You have this theme that starts to emerge of, you know, it's really hard to do big things. Maybe we should do something different. And the problem is with that, we have to do a lot of these big things because we're running big systems. So my focus today is going to be to go through a traditional kind of overview slide deck, but to pause a little bit along the way and say, well, what can we observe from this? What can we learn about the environment that we're working in to try to increase the likelihood of success? Paul, keep me honest on that. Make sure that we have chance for conversation, and feel free to interrupt along the way. If somebody who's been in this project or been involved hears something that they think, wait a second, this is some polished whitewash here, then you call me on it, and let's have an engaging conversation about CST. Sound all right? Good? Okay. If I can learn how to use that. So for those of you who don't know about this project, a bit of a brief overview. The three organizations of Vancouver Coastal Health, Provincial Health Services Authority, and Providence Healthcare came together really about 4 years ago. And they said, okay, you know, to Paul's point, we have diminishing public sector dollars. We need to find some greater efficiencies. We all have aging systems. And on top of that, we want a system that has standardized care. We want to transform the way we do our business. We want to create a foundation of information to support better clinical decision making, to support patients moving across the continuum. And we want just not new tech, but we want to transform the way healthcare is happening across our services, broadly speaking. So what was birthed was this clinical and system transformation project. And the idea was really to support an implementation of clinical systems that replaces all the existing core major systems. We're talking 7 or 8 ADT systems, and a full stack end-to-end that would impact everybody that is involved in some way in healthcare across those organizations and all the patients. In a nutshell, most of British Columbia. And the idea was to do this in stages across the organizations. So the question then was, well, how does this fit with the strategic directions of these organizations? And it's quite convenient to say, well, each of them actually have key areas, often influenced by the triple aim. But we're all framing around these overarching goals of trying to improve health of the populations we serve, to improve the patient's experience, to reduce the per capita costs that we spend on healthcare, and have a more efficient system. So everybody agrees on all that. But of course, how you translate that into practice when you start to drill down gets very different across these organizations, and you get into discussions around, well, who's exactly making decisions on how we do things, not just what the broad goal is. And what does that mean? When I define quality of care, does it mean the same thing to me as it does to you, or efficiency? And how do we deal with the trade-offs between these sometimes competing demands? So a lot of what you'll hear from me today is that we have these multiple truths that are all individually on their own correct. If I say A, Paul says, yeah, that's right. A is right. But B, and I'll say, I know B is right too, but it conflicts with A. Right. Well, so how now do we figure out how to work through this? And that is what I think is some of the challenge of these large projects. We'll come back to that. So the project composition, as it stands right now, you have, and I'm sure people know these players, everybody for the most part here is pretty well versed with our health system. PHSA is led by Karl Roy, president and CEO. The Ministry of Health has Associate Deputy Minister Sabine Fugan on the project, and Mary Akenhuizen, the CEO from Vancouver Coastal Health, and Diane Doyle from Providence Healthcare represent a project board that provides overarching governance leadership for the initiative. Interesting to note, I said I was going to make some comments along the way. Three of these four were not part of this initiative when it began. So the casting of the approach of what are we trying to do, how are we going to do it, Carl and Mary and Sabine, they weren't at the table for that conversation. And in fact, some of these roles have had multiple peoples going through. And that's part of the nature of the landscape. That does happen in the private sector too. It happens in the public sector. And of course, then you throw into things like election cycles and how that might affect work in a complicated public environment. So the project composition shifts over time. And of course, that has an impact on back to this question that people say is, why is this so hard? Why do we have so much challenge pulling these things off? So I'm going to touch on that theme along the way to help understand this landscape. So they got together and they said, well, what are we really trying to achieve and why? Why are we doing this? Well, we're creating a narrative here of this is a big, complicated thing. It's expensive. What do we really see as our key drivers here? And the project went through a huge amount of engagement of stakeholders and spent a lot of time on trying to boil down the key drivers: patient safety, improving the quality and consistent care, improving the experience for patients, and drawing on data. And each one of these is all fine and good, but when you start to drill down, again, different people will have different ideas around the value of that. If you're an internal medicine physician, you might have a different need to draw on data than if you're a surgeon. At least you may think so anyway. I mean, whether you could argue that, but people are going to come to it and say, well, you know, that matters for these people more than for me. Perhaps a clinician has a different interest than somebody who's doing business intelligence work or a researcher. Maybe a patient advocate would say, well, really, the only thing that matters is that I feel like I'm treated with respect and you're doing things that don't harm me, and that's the main thing. So, you know, how you drill down in each one of these drivers also sometimes doesn't give you enough to really prioritize your work. But there we are. We're trying to transform our system, looking at putting in new workflows, order sets, closed-loop medication, and I apologize for those that aren't well-versed in the lingo. I'm not going to take too much time to drill down. I'm going to assume people have a good sense of what these words mean. Of course, then moving to an electronic record housed by, quote-unquote, a shared clinical information system. And recognizing that that transformation will only happen if we also look at the quality of the culture and the type of culture and how we identify our learning systems as one that will continuously change. That actually feeds into a big conversation around how to implement. Do you think that you deliver the product done, or do you think that you deliver the product good enough and evolve it over time? And there's quite a bit of debate that triggers around whether you have to do things in an incremental way or not. So we'll come back to that, I'm sure, in discussions around big bang strategies versus not big bang strategies. Interestingly enough, when you speak to consultants across the industry, you will not find a consensus on this opinion. And you will find successful deployments that did both, neither, a mixture, a combo. If you look at current environments, we already live in a mixed environment, but we do have examples of successful big bang. And the conversation ends up being positional often relative to which one of the other drivers at that point in time you're feeling you need to emphasize. So am I feeling more heat on the clinical efficiency question? That might lead me in a different way. Am I feeling more heat on a patient-centeredness or a continuum of care or a data-driven? And whatever you're focusing on leads you to different implementation strategies at that point in time. But they're all valid. It's just responding to different pressures that do change over time. And I think that's an example why it is so hard to do this work and it's so complicated. So where are we doing this? Well, as I said, across all of BC, within the cancer agency, you have 6 regional cancer centers, 12 consultative clinics, 19 oncology clinics. You see them on the map. Cancer agency, as you know, is across all of BC. You have... it's interesting that I got the slide deck from communications. We have 35 to 40 facilities. You'd think we would know if it's a facility or not, right? Apparently some are confused whether they're a facility. But that's actually, it's funny comment because we got to this question of, well, how many clinics do we have? And do you think that we know what a clinic is? We don't. We actually have trouble defining a clinic. We've had ranges from 500 to 900. Depending on how we count a clinic. If I have a special session that I'm open for a certain type of patients from 2 till 3:30, and I put a letterhead with a title of a certain designated clinical group I'm targeting, does that constitute a clinic? It's still in the same environment. It's not a new network drop. Maybe I change something in my ADT system. Maybe I don't. But see, that gets to the complexity of this environment. So we're 35 to 40 facilities. We're approximately 3,416 acute beds. If anyone's been part of utilization management, defining a bed in and of itself is not so clear. And then 2,148 LTC beds. So here you see all the different environments that we're working at. And we're talking the busiest, most complex environments within our health sector in British Columbia. And who are we involving in this? About 35,000 people that are going to be using the systems that we're replacing. And obviously the largest subset are the nurses, over 11,000 nurses, 5,800 physicians. I take issue with that depending on how you define this. So if I'm receiving information and I'm in northern BC, I'm not included in that. But I'm certainly a stakeholder because of health information exchange discussions, right? And interestingly here, we don't have the number of patients listed. So right away, you could go back and say, well, you know what? If this was driven by a value of the drivers around patients, wouldn't you have bubbles here of the types of people that we're trying to serve? So even how we frame the conversation comes back to values that change over time. But here we are. We're trying to change successfully how almost 40,000 people practice every day their business of delivering service. And a snapshot of the variety of areas that we're going to be engaged in. I don't have a watch on. Paul, how are we doing on time? <clears throat> 9:05. So I was trying to be a young, cool guy, and I have no watch today. So... we started looking at, well, what are all the things we need to have in place in order to sustain our system? And what are the components? I don't know if you guys in the back, can you see that small font? Probably not. So what's that? Even at the front. I'm going to read the tiles, and I'll just share with you a subset of some of the issues that we're working on. And folks... you know, feel free during some of a question and answer if you want to drill in on some of this. And as was stated earlier, slide decks will be circulated and contact information is there. People are welcome to email anyone in the project, including myself, about any of these areas. So clinical informatics, obviously an growing, emerging field, owned by everybody. We have clinical informaticists that are clinical with an MD title. We have clinical informaticists that are nurses. We have lab informaticists, HIM coding informaticists, pharmacy informaticists. We have folks that are growing into the clinical informatics from the IT side and folks that are growing into it from the business and IM side. And we need to have some clarity as we're evolving. How do all those disparate components of managing of the clinical content, the data standards, the architecture, clinical requirements, do we have minimum requirements? Is there a minimum core electronic health record data set? What is the workflow that we're trying to improve and make sure that we don't break certain workflows? You need someone who understands both the technology and the clinical practice. So this field of clinical informatics is core to a lot of what we're trying to do. And we don't have, across our three organizations, any kind of centralized or hybrid model of managing clinical informatics. So I'll tell a brief story. And this will give a sense of how all these things come into play in micro. My mother-in-law this week moved into our home because she's been designated palliative. And Wednesday, we were scrambling to try to make room in a shelving unit that was in a previously a den and now is her bedroom. And there's been a woman who's been helping support my family as a cleaning lady on and off a few times a month for about 14 years. She started off helping with my kids. So in her mind, she kind of has some sense of practice and domain of how we manage stuff in the house. And my mother-in-law came in with a care aide who's been caring for her in her home for a few weeks. And she knew that right away her first job was to set the room up in an environment that was good to care for her. And my wife said, you know, see these shelves over here? How about if you move some of this stuff over here to make room for mom's clothes? Great. You'll see why this relates to the story in a minute. Bear with me. So the care aide looked at the situation, and she saw that we have a closet full of food that could easily be better organized. And she started rearranging the pantry system and moving some stuff from one shelf to the other, and she started unloading it all and putting it out on the floor. And the whole hallway is now full with all kinds of food items and stuff. And I walk by, I'm a little twitchy because I have celiac, and I see that on the top shelf where I keep all my gluten-free stuff, there's now a bag of flour. And I'm going, I don't feel comfortable about this, how we're doing this, but I don't want to get too involved because actually I'm running through to the next meeting and the care aide is taking direction actually from my brother-in-law. He's the one that hired her. The cleaning lady, she usually takes direction from me or my wife. We usually tell her different things, but she's been with us for 15 years. So over 15 years, she kind of gets it. And now this woman who's done cleaning in my home for 15 years feels a lot of ownership, is looking at this care aide, making a mess of everything, and nobody knows who's directing whom. We have no consensus on the goal or the process, but everybody is pretty sure they know they're trying to do the same goal. Everybody's trying to make an orderly home that works for caring for this, you know, for the mother. Okay, so let's come back into CST Project. If people want to know why is this so hard, right? So I think we need to reflect a little bit around how humans work. We like to have pride in what we do, and we take ownership, usually, if we're good at it, right? And we need to have clarity of a plan, but we often end up having different views on how to get there, and they're not right or wrong. But if we all go about it at the same time in different ways, well, then we end up having a mess of flour all over the, you know, the gluten-free items, right? So when you come back into all of these tile diagrams, and we need to figure out, well, who has access to the system? We have different privacy officers in each organization, right? And what does the rule say of the technical support? So on that tile on the bottom right, we have technical folks that work in each of the areas. Lab has some of their own technical people, and they need them. IT has some of their own technical people. We need them. We need a disaster recovery plan. We need to make sure that system performance is integral. We have to manage the different domains and the testing spaces. We have interfaces to manage, et cetera. If you look into the middle tile there, information data management, we have three different data analytics groups. They have different visions around our journey towards leveraging data. On the one hand, we might have someone who's really aspirational, wants to do all kinds of really fancy things. They're well-versed in Hadoop. They want to do big data. They envision bringing in social media information in order to have a population strategy that is really client-based. And then you might have someone else who says, you know, that's great, but we're not there yet. Don't go chasing shiny objects. Let's at least have a basic key performance indicator that we can support. Start there. Both legitimate, right? So in any one of these tiles, we have to work through what is our combined common vision on how to manage our system and what are we trying to achieve, and balance back to the beginning driver diagram of what values are we going to align with together at the same point in time. Because if right now organization one, for whatever reason, is super focused on quality, and organization two, for whatever reason, is super focused on efficiency and value for money and cost constraints, then we're going to be out of line. Even though both are objectively correct in their assessment of the needs of the system, you can't necessarily meet the goals all at the same time because they conflict. And I think for me, that's a bit, and I'm coming to a summary point, and I have a number of more slides, but I'm going to race through them so we have open conversation. But part of the question of why is this so hard comes back to just all of that. That's the nature of the system that we're working in. And it should be so. If on the other hand, the bottom falls through and we can't figure out how to do this work together, then you end up having a knee-jerk reaction that says, you know what, just blow all that up, put in a really strong-minded leader who can just drive through all this and just make it happen, right? And you kind of get what happens, I think, back to the border conversation. It's a good example of where people get frustrated with government south of us, and they say, just get someone strong to just make something happen. And you can make something happen, but the something might not be what you really originally was hoping for. We need to figure out how to work together, and it's really hard. It's complicated. So these linkages that exist across technical application support, end user support, business continuity, device strategy, clinical informatics, access and provisioning, our policies and procedures, how do we evaluate what we're doing and tie it into research, be learning organizations, and manage the data and the information in a coherent governance way across all of BC, this is all tough work, but critical. And on the ground, you know, you get closer to the actual implementation, and we're moving with CST to our first deployment in the fall on the coastal area of care for Vancouver Coastal Health, meaning the North Shore and the associated sites, and specifically Lionsgate Hospital. CST will be deploying there this fall. You have in there inpatient programs. You can see I'm not going to go through all the list. I think people are pretty familiar with Lionsgate. You have ambulatory clinics, you have outpatient clinics, and you have some subset of what the rest of the system has. And our strategy here is to build an enterprise system that we add on to over time as we move through the roadmap. So for example, they don't have a renal services program at Lionsgate. But there will be a renal services program when we get to St. Paul's. We'll add that in over time as the roadmap expands. So there's some building that continues, and there's expansion that continues. Just a couple comments on some key lessons learned. We did, and then I'll open the floor for conversation. We have done, and I know people want to hear about probably eye health and how's that affect us. So I won't wait for questions about that. I'll just speak to it. We're looking to all the implementations, be them at CAMH, London Health Science, PEIs, One Island Health System, or North York General. And we know that, of course, right here, our experience in Nanaimo gives us a lot to learn from as well. And we know that we have to frame the project as a clinical transformation. It is not just an IT project. Candace was talking about how BCHIM started in the CIOs. We've learned a lot. Last year, I spoke to the conference here about how it's not just that culture, each strategy, it's also the business process, each your IT. If it doesn't make workflows work, it's not going to happen. We are trying to standardize practice, and we'll talk a lot about what that means, but in some way, shape, or form with multiple sites, the end goal is not to have everybody doing everything the same way they did it before. We do need to engage all stakeholders. I'll talk about that. Continuous improvement. I mentioned that when we go live, it's going to have to continue to evolve. We're not going to have everything done, and you often find that people don't really know the problems with the system until they start using it. So, in fact, a lot of the tweaking that you're doing before your go-live ends up being just wasted time. We've heard that end again and again and again. Don't try to get it perfect, because until you're using it, you don't know. So we got to get it in and then evolve from there. And let's learn from those who have experience. This one's kind of interesting to me, because another truth that we've heard was make sure you have local people that really know the environment. Well, here in BC, we don't have a lot of local people that know the environment and have a lot of the experience, because we haven't done a lot of health record deployments up to this HIMSS level of a 4, 5, 6 level HIMSS. So those true truth, that's a true exact example where if I was one day saying, you know, Paul, we got to make sure we really have people who are homegrown, know the local environments. Very good. Okay, we agree. And Paul said, yeah, but you know, Yoel, we got to have people who have done this before. We have to have experience. True. Okay, but those two truths don't often sit together well. You see, so it's an example of how this plays out. And we cannot underestimate the human resource needs. We heard from site again and again and again. People need elbow support. Don't come in and out. Make sure they have training. Don't assume that if you sent them a PowerPoint, that's enough. We have to go deep on supporting people in this transformation. And we have to set ourselves up as a nimble process for dealing with issues. And people have to believe, and really believe, that you're going to tend to their concerns. If there's some notion that we'll come to it next year, that's not good enough. We have to build in a very robust response capacity. Otherwise, trust in the whole thing will fall apart. So in summary, we learned that this has to be for clinicians, by clinicians. We need to focus on the efficiencies of the workflows. I'm sure some of you see these notifications from the U.S. from Scribes companies. One of the largest growing sector in healthcare in the U.S. is Scribes. That is not our vision. This has to work efficiently for clinicians. And it has to be operationally consumed. To develop a lot of product that people can't use or absorb, that's not going to help us. And it has to have a view of something that is integrating across the continuum. We'll hear from Doctors of BC about the primary healthcare initiative. It's my view that, ironically perhaps, but core to supporting a population health strategy is having acute information that moves through the system well. So engagement with professionals is key. And I'm just going to skip now, I think, to the end to make sure we have time for conversation. And this was video around closed-loop medication, but it's about 3 minutes, and I'm not going to take the time to show it. So, Paul, over to you. If you want to facilitate any questions, happy to take them.
I'm guessing that there are quite a few questions. I could start them off for you, but questions for Yoel. Let's just stand up when you ask your question. Please.
Hi, I'm Linda from Perinatal Services. Thank you, Yoel, for a terrific detailed presentation. Really appreciate the summary of this CST system project. And I do appreciate all the complexities that go with it. But now I'm going to put on my patient hat, okay? So I understand that the vision of the CST is to transform a fragmented health information system, I guess, in the Lower Mainland. So my question to you is that I live in Fraser Health. Okay, but I also have services that I utilize in Vancouver. So why is it that Fraser Health is not part of this CST project at this time, if you want a seamless system?
Next question. Sorry. I think that's you, Yoel.
All right, I'll take a stab, and I know there's some people in the audience here. Audience? I don't think we're an audience. We're all together, I think, in this. So Paul and I were chatting last night of who's on the playing field. Well, Philip, feel free to chime in. The way I see this, first of all, is, you talk about too big to fail. What is something that is too big to fail mean, and what does that look like? And if we're having enough challenge with a project that's coming into its third year and hasn't yet implemented with these three organizations, I personally don't think that adding a fourth one would simplify. And it wouldn't increase our likelihood of success at this time. Now, it's interesting how the conversation around single systems is evolving. I had a conversation with a CIO from a system in Washington half a year ago. They're a large health system, and they consume multiple hospitals a year. They're in five states. And they spent most of the early 2000s on a model of acquiring and replacing, ripping and replacing. So they had an idea, you know what, we need to make sure that we're all in the same core system. And they went through a really big switch out, and it cost them a lot of time and money. And I said, would you do that again? And they said, you know, I think at this point, given the amount of growth that's happened in interoperability of data, I would have focused more on health information exchange, on shared common repositories, and on standardizing the clinical content. Because at the end of the day, if three different systems have the same minimum data set definitions with the same specs and standardized industry norms and a common repository, maybe it doesn't matter whether it's Epic or Cerner or Meditech or Allscripts. Here in BC, we don't have those things. We don't have a minimum defined data set. We don't have clear specs. We don't have standards. Our nomenclature is it's suboptimal. If you're going to leave the industry in that state, then maybe having one system is what we would need. But I don't think it has to be so. I'm giving you a nuanced answer. Is it political? Sure. But are there good reasons to debate whether it's a good idea or not to have a common system? I don't think that you have to have a common system to meet your goals of patient-centeredness. So that's.
Thanks, Yoel. Well done. The gentleman on the middle.
Our resident biggest fan.
Getting a reputation.
Thanks, Charles.
Did Philip want to add anything to that comment? No. Sorry. Doug, just excuse me for a minute. Where is Philip? I saw him earlier.
Philip said to go out to a meeting.
Okay, sorry. Forget that. Over to you, Doug.
So, thanks, Joel. You all and I have had lots of talks about CST. I'm Doug Cordemache. I'm a plastic surgeon. I work mainly at Children's Hospital, but also at VGH. I also work at Providence Healthcare, so I cover all of the three health authorities involved in the CST project from a clinical point of view. I have been the chair of the Clinical Informatics Committee for Children's and Women's Hospital. I sit on the PHSA IMETS Policy and Planning Committee, and I work on various clinical informatics committees at Children's Hospital. So I've been quite involved in this over the last several years, looking at IT stuff. So first of all, from your little picture with all the tiles, I couldn't help but noticing that end user support was the smallest tile on the screen. And the second smallest tile was evaluation, and evaluation had no subcategories underneath it. So there's a long way to go in actually making it work for the people who have to use it, and there has to be a feedback loop there. So I just bring that up as a comment. I kind of echo my table colleagues' sentiment about, you know, why are we not just one big system? I think it was two meetings ago in this room, a representative of the IT branch of the Ministry of Health told us that, in fact, all of the standards for health documentation are written. And, in fact, that information was available on the Ministry of Health website, and it's hard to find, but you can dig through and get it. And if you print it off, it's a book about this big. But everything from what's a surname, what's a given name, how big the field should be, what the standards are, has all been documented. Whether it's actually something that the government has said, this is something that people who supply software to do this work have to use or not, I don't know. But there is a huge document that says what the standards are for health information in BC. I don't know if there's anyone here from the Ministry of Health. who knows about that, who could comment. But, I mean, I've actually found that information. I've printed some of it and looked at it myself. So why not do what Alberta did and go big and say, we'll have one health system and just do it?
Okay, well, interesting question. With the
why not do what Alberta
answer.
Did?
Go big or go home.
You know, I think, Doug, that you heard my earlier comment where I said, you know, if we don't succeed and figure our way through, then people end up saying just tip over the apple cart in some way, put in a centralized strong leadership. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we head towards that direction. If I put on the other hat that I wear, which is leading a consolidated service of health information management, Shelley, you'll talk more about that. We certainly have a lot of experience where, you know, we step back and say, well, if we were working with one organization, not four, things would be a lot easier. I think that's really a question for the Ministry of Health. I do think that we're a bit stuck in the middle. It's hard to half swallow something, not fully swallow it. And I don't believe that the status quo is where we should stay. I think we need to continue to evolve. But I think it's a question for the Ministry of Health, really.
Any more questions? Sorry, Doug, I just want to spread it around a little bit, if I may. Sorry, Alan.
Thanks. You'd mentioned the phrase, too big to fail. There's also the issue, too big to succeed. I'm just curious about what early warning systems you have or stress analyses things you have that are able to avoid failure, even sub-portions of your project. What is the early warning system, and how rapidly can you respond to a changing situation, or you notice something that's going bad, and how do you fix it? This is also complex, but it's more of an infrastructure behind the project, not the project itself, because sure. That can, in fact, save you from not necessarily failure, but adding five more years to your project.
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually this project has a lot of subcomponents to it. We have a subcomponent related to closed-loop and pharmacy. First out of the gate, in some ways, is a front-end speech recognition initiative that's laying the groundwork for physician online electronic documentation. And exactly along those lines, we've created metrics and a scorecarding system to track the adoption and the successful use of front-end by the physicians, mostly physicians, some nurse practitioners too. And we are tracking what percent of their work is done through the new system versus the old system. And we're tracking as a run chart whether or not it's a growing, increasing line or a flat or a decreasing by physician user. So we have created some scorecards to track adoption for the front-end speech recognition initiative. And I think that we will create similar metrics once we go live for the use of the system within Cerner. You'll be able to see all kinds of metrics from the system, like if I'm using something and I stop in the middle of my documentation. So, you know, uncompleted documents, for example, that would be a metric. And we will create a scorecarding system to have that feedback loop. With the front-end speech, we're now going to be feeding that back to the doctors themselves to say, you know, you've done 80% of your reports with this tool. On the other hand, you have only done 15. Why is that? Can we help you, et cetera? And a feedback loop then that comes back into the training and support model. So we're aware of that, and I agree it's really important.
We have about 2 minutes left, yeah. Paul.
I'll just take that in a second. We're getting close to the end. We want to make time for a transition over. I just want to announce that for those of you who want to interact with us on Twitter, the hashtag is hashtag BChimps, right? So obviously BChimps, you know how to spell that? Good, it's on your face. So hashtag BChimps, and we're very keen to receive some of your other questions because there's probably a lot here. Yeah, go ahead, quickly. One quick question and a quick answer.
Good morning. Hi, Joel. We've met in the hallway a couple of times at CST.
Nice to see you.
My name is Dana Katudin. I'm a clinical analyst at CST. I'm on the maternity design team. And something that you had mentioned earlier is we won't know until we use it or till users actually use it. And this is sort of to echo what Doug said about user-centered design. What I'm wondering is there going to be any opportunity for any clinical simulation type work? And I ask that because I'm a recent graduate at the University of Victoria. I did a health information science degree, and my thesis was actually based on clinical simulation, and I actually found that there was a lot of interesting work and things that were identified that we could actually work on in preparation for Go Live. So I'm just interested in what the plan is for that. Thank you.
Paul wanted a quick answer, so I'll say yes. So I'll note that we had a visit to Intermountain Health System where they had exactly that, a scenario where clinicians are doing a full end-to-end walkthrough while they're simulating, but actually alongside. So I'm in the ED and I'm in parallel practicing, doing my electronic documentation alongside a real case. So not so much a simulation, but an in parallel performance test to an actual care delivery structure was what we saw there. And we thought that made a lot of sense, and we envision incorporating that into our whole clinical adoption validation process. So thank you, yes.
Great. Sorry, we're out of time, but thank you. Yoel, that was a great speech. Great talk. Thank you very much. Lots of questions still to come. Thank you.
So good morning, everyone. My name is Bridget Mettler, and I'm your BeChimps conference chair. I am also on your board, the working board, the very, very hard working board that we have for BeChimps. This was a lot of work. There were only seven of us, if you counted us as we were getting introduced, and we did pull all this off together. So thank you to all my colleagues. Our next topic is the patient medical home, a clear path to care, a transformed system of care, and an integrated system of care. These are the keys for success and the vision for the patient medical home. The patient medical home, it's a better way for family doctors to get support and increase access to care for patients. Our next speaker is the Executive Director of Community Practice, Quality, and Integration at the Doctors of BC. In her spare time, she's also a practicing family physician from White Rock. Our next speaker is also funny, good-looking, smart, talented. She's also my boss's boss, so I'll be looking for work if I mess this up. Actually, I am very truly honored that she has taken out the time here today out of her busy schedule to come and talk to us about this new initiative. I'm actually very happy that you did that for us. That was really sweet. I know we're all eager to learn more about this new strategic direction, so please join me in giving a very warm BeChimps welcome to Dr. Brenda Heffer.
Thank you for that introduction. I am excited and pleased to be here, although in some ways I have to admit I do feel a bit like a fish out of water, because one thing I am definitely not is an informaticist. So I'm a family doctor by background, and in my role, one of the primary things I do is support the General Practice Services Committee. And I'm going to try to present to you probably a different perspective than you're used to, because I'm coming at this from a community point of view, from a family practice point of view, as to what an integrated system of care might look like from that perspective. And as I speak, I would think that you'll hopefully be thinking about how would the IT systems come to support that when we're talking about relationships and patient flow and linkages across the system, we know that the IT system is one of the key enablers. And we've heard already the huge challenges in the system, the complexity of the system, the pieces of the system, and I believe that we all have a unique perspective to bear on this, and together we have the opportunity to actually make something work. So it's exciting times, challenging times, and scary times. So I just wanted to, for those who may not be familiar, just give a little bit of the background of what the collaborative committees are, what's called the Joint Collaborative Committees, because that'll help you to understand the kind of platform or the background from where some of this work comes. So under the Physician-Master Agreement between Doctors of BC and the Ministry of Health, there's four different committees. The General Practice Services Committee focuses primarily on family doctors and family practice and care for patients through that lens. Shared Care Committee focuses primarily on the interface between family doctors and specialists. Specialist Services Committee is one that focuses primarily on specialists and facility-based care, really. And the Joint Standing Committee focuses on rural issues. So what I'm talking about comes mostly from the General Practice Services Committee, but includes all. And it's really a joint perspective from the Ministry of Health and Doctors of BC, and health authorities also are represented at the table of the General Practice Services Committee. So that's the background, the platform. And we've already heard about the triple aim. One of the nuances I would like to point out is back early in the days of GPSC, GPSC also adopted the triple aim as the framework for trying to view any initiatives or programs or projects that it was supporting, but also talked to IHI, dialogued with IHI, who originated the triple aim, about adding provider experience of care to that third leg of the stool. Because they felt if when we're designing systems, we don't also include the provider, then we're actually missing a key piece. So I just wanted to point out that that's the nuance for the triple aim for us. So when GPSC, under their mandate, is looking for solutions to support and sustain full-service family practice in BC, that was the goal, basically to really try to support longitudinal comprehensive care from physicians. So there's four main areas that General GPSC focuses on. One is delivering training, education, and professional development. That primarily comes through the Practice Support Program, which is actually delivered through health authority-based teams, but supported through materials and funding from the GPSC. So these go into physician practices, provide education training in such areas as mental health, chronic disease management, practice efficiencies, end-of-life care, pain management, these kinds of areas. And most recently, the way that this has been delivered has been more integrated technologically with the electronic medical record, so that the tools and resources are actually available to physicians in their EMR in many cases. So that's been an evolution there. GPSC has incentive programs, so payments to physicians that help to encourage coordinated longitudinal care. So basically for providing fees for physicians for proactive things, such as sitting down and designing a care plan. And as we talk about the evolution towards team-based care and the fact that a care plan needs to be integrated with other team members, you can see the IT ramifications there. So it's one thing to be a physician talking to a patient and designing a care plan. It's another thing to be a physician talking to a patient who's also got other members of the team contributing to a care plan, and how do we actually support that integration? GPSC encourages doctor-led innovation, so basically looking at the system from a provider and patient point of view on the ground and trying to influence the direction that things go, and empowers a collective voice through the divisions of family practice with doctors working together on a community level to interface with partners. So as you can see, divisions of family practice, how many here have been familiar with them? So maybe a third. So divisions of family practice started in about 2009 in three different communities and now encompass 35 divisions of family practice across the province, which is hundreds of communities, including many rural communities. And what they are is networks of family physicians who are supported to come together as a not-for-profit society. So they're actually a legal entity that can then enter into partnership discussions with the health authority, with other community partners, and be able to collectively actually provide support to the doctors and even run some services, such as the residential care program, which is now in about 90 communities across the province, where doctors are working with the care facilities and the teams to ensure 24-hour access and comprehensive care for patients. So divisions of family practice do a lot of things to try to integrate care within their own communities. They provide a new way of working together, because previously family practice offices were kind of off in little bubbles on their own in the community and not really connected to anything, especially as fewer physicians were actually involved in facility-based care. So even the linkage with the health authorities has been very, very fragmented. But when you have kind of an entity that actually is representative of the physicians in a community, it's provided much more opportunity for fulsome discussions, co-planning. And I know a lot of you who work in the health authorities have benefited from that interface. So there's what's called a collaborative services table at the community level that includes GPSC representation, which is the partnership of Doctors of BC and the Ministry of Health. It includes health authority representation, community representation, and often patient representation as well. So when you look at what we need to do, we're talking all in our own way of co-creating the future of integrated healthcare. And I'm going to come at it from a community point of view. But really, I believe that we're all aiming for the same thing, and that's for care that's more comprehensive, more seamless, more understandable for the patient. And over the past years, in the primary care realm, there's been a lot of work done collaboratively for us to come together to improve care for patients. We've, through the GP for Me initiative over the last 2 or 3 years, managed to attach more than 10,000 patients. But there's still a long way to come. And last year, the GPSC did a concerted effort to hear through a visioning process, which involved a lot of IT. It was a digital dialogue as well as in-person facilitated sessions and a thought exchange process, heard from more than 1,700 family doctors as to what they perceived as the future of healthcare in the community. And they confirmed that there was still a big emphasis and value in providing longitudinal care. There was a commitment to generalism and providing broad scope of services, but the recognition that they couldn't do it on their own and needed to have support to do that. And there was recognition of the value of working as a team. So I really think that for those of us who are old enough to remember, the days of Marcus Welby with his black bag going from house to house are really behind us, and physicians are realizing more and more with the complexity of the system, the needs of the patients, that there is a need to work in a different way. So the GPSC vision has been to enable access to quality primary health care that effectively meets the needs of patients and populations in BC, using the patient medical home to form the foundation for care delivery within a broader integrated system of primary and community care. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to explain to you and you'll be able to have a better understanding of what the patient medical home actually is and what we're talking about from a community point of view when we're talking about an integrated system of care. So on your tables, there is a diagram which you can feel free to refer to. But I wanted to explain to you about the BC patient medical home. So probably, can I just see hands again as to how many people are familiar with the patient medical home model? Okay, actually not many. I would say maybe a fifth of people. So when I say that GPSC has been focused over the years of its existence, which is since about 2002, on helping to support physicians to provide longitudinal care, when we went through the visioning process over the last year or 18 months, we were trying to conceptualize what would an ideal family practice look like. And, you know, through our visioning process, talking to partners, looking at ministry strategic directions, and looking at other jurisdictions, it became very clear that this had already been articulated. And really, it was the patient medical home. So the patient medical home has been adopted in many jurisdictions and in the states, and it was called, I think, the patient-centered medical home. So there's different names for it. So if you look on the College of Family Physicians website, they have an explanation of patient medical home. Now, we adopted this, but also adapted it to our context. So this model kind of visualizes what we see in BC as the patient medical home. And I'm going to just walk through it with you so that hopefully you'll understand it. But in BC, we actually added two additional what's called attributes that weren't as emphasized in the other literature that we saw. One was the idea of the physicians working together, so the network supporting a practice. And the other was the idea of physicians working together in a community to actually support the system, recognizing that we have a huge strength here in our province that we really need to capitalize and build on, and that's the collaborative relationship that we have with the Ministry of Health, and that's the collaborative relationship we have developed through the divisions of family practice, giving the opportunity for doctors to actually work together to help to address with their partners the needs of their population as a whole. So it's been a huge shift from physicians really only having the skills and the perspective to deal with the patient in front of them and maybe the practice that they exist, that they have, to being able to look collectively at the needs of their population in their community. So when we look at the BC patient medical home based on this diagram, which I apologize looks quite washed out on the screen. I'm not sure what the bulb's too bright or something. But in the middle, there's a yellow circle, which basically is patient-centered whole person care. So I think that's what we all want. There's where, no matter what perspective we come from, we can all focus. What does the patient need? And that's what really helps us to find a common point of intersection and conversation. The green circles around that are basically what are the qualities of service or attributes that a patient should expect to receive in the community in their family doctor's office. So basically, a patient medical home reminder is simply GP practice. And GP practice is where patients generally receive about 80% of their care. So they need to know that they have a personal family physician, or in some cases it's a nurse practitioner. But they need to have a relationship with someone who's the most responsible provider of their care. Someone where the buck stops there in terms of putting the pieces together. They need to have contact, which means timely access. So that includes both being able to get in to their doctor's office or the team that works with their doctor on the same day if needed, and they need to know where to go for appropriate 24-hour care. They need to have comprehensive care. So if the patient medical home either needs to deliver the scope of services that they need from the community or be networked and linked with where they can get those services. Patients need continuity of care. They need to know that the providers are with them over the span of time. It's based on enduring relationships, and the care needs to be coordinated. And this is where, again, IT really comes in. When we talk about the patient medical home as the hub for coordination of care, not only through relationships, but informational continuity has to support that. So that's what patients expect to receive. The blue circles represent the relationships that doctors need to have in order to enable this kind of care. This kind of care is enabled by having a team, either within the practice or access to team members that can provide an enhanced level of care, increase the capacity, and do a better job in aspects of care for the patients than a doctor can on his or her own. Physicians need to be working with other physicians through networking, both with other GPs and with specialists, in order to provide a full spectrum. And as we said, they need to be able to influence the directions of the care provided, particularly in their own communities. Now, the gray bars underneath represent the structural elements that need to support this in order to be effective. And you'll see on the top is information technology enabled. So physicians, other providers, and staff within the practice need to be IT enabled, including optimizing the use of their EMR and being able to collect data to inform quality improvements in patient care and clinical workflow. And the EMR needs to be able to link appropriately with other providers and parts of the system. And that includes community providers, pharmacies, acute care facilities. Ideally, there needs to be virtual care options, including email, telephone, video conferencing. So in an ideal world, all these would be enabled and optimized to provide the best care for patients. And then other structural enablers are the ability to participate in education, training, research, mentorship, evaluation and quality improvement, and also the internal and external support, such as a business model, which supports this kind of care, provincial, regional system policies that support this kind of care. So the goals of this work are to improve access for patients, to improve capacity in the system, to optimize linkages, and to produce a better work environment for physicians and other providers. This may be something that you are familiar with, which is called the Target Operating Model from the Ministry of Health. Have many of you seen this? And it's also on the table. Yeah. So the Ministry of Health expresses their view of the integrated system of primary and community care as having the primary care home in the center, which is a network of the patient medical homes linked to health authority provided primary care services. And then this needs to be linked with other parts of the service. So the areas that look at how are we going to optimize the patient medical home and the networks of patient medical homes are being led by GPSC with engagement of other partners. But the health authorities on a community level have been challenged that they need to look at four primary areas of care. And their challenge is to be able to integrate those, simplify those, such as such that they can actually link effectively, both through relationships and through information flow, with the patient medical home and the networks. So those four areas that the health authorities have been challenged to work on right now are services for complex medical and frail elderly patients, and the specialized services for moderate to severe mental health and substance use patients. Those two are the ones that are being worked on immediately as we speak. But in addition, they're working on streamlining access to surgical services and cancer care between the specialized services and community. So we can see how the work that's coming from acute care is being interfaced ideally with the work that's happening in the community to form an overall integrated system of care. So as we move into a Prezi presentation to pictorially represent this, I want us to think about what conversations that we need to have to enable this work, and in your case, particularly from an IMIT point of view, and what key messages that you see as most important to increase the understanding of this system.
So Brenda has a Prezi presentation. Just 2 seconds while I switch it on for her.
So
while
we
pray for me.
While we're waiting for that to come up, I just want to ask you a question, if I may, just on behalf. So we've got another presentation coming up later with Betty De Silva. Betty's probably in the audience, I guess, somewhere. And she's going to be talking about how we do this technically. Do you think that we're overcomplicating the situation from a technical point of view, given the fact that you've just told us that the key thing really is a shared care plan?
Well, I hate to answer anything from a technical point of view.
Well, let's leave that till later if you're ready to run the present.
That's where I feel like I'm stepping out of my zone. So okay. My goal is to try to have a picture of the system, and your goal is to help to design IT systems that support this. So when we look at what would it mean to co-create the future of an integrated healthcare system, and again, this is from a community level, it needs to be simple, accessible, and understandable. So we hear so much about patient navigators, needing a patient navigator. Now, shouldn't our goal be to make a system that doesn't need a patient navigator, ideally? So despite all the good things that I talked about, and there are many, but still, the challenge is many patients still don't have a family doctor. The system is complex and fragmented. Our population has increasingly complex needs, and it's difficult for patients to navigate the system. So somehow we have to evolve things to the next level. It's critical because we can't survive in the way we are. So, like I said, I wanted to share and help you to understand more about what the GPSC's future vision is about what an integrated health system would look like. So that encompasses the patient medical home as providing the foundation in the community for the linkages of the system, and then secondarily for the interface of the acute care system. And the primary care home represents the health authority primary care services and how they link together. So we have to, as physicians, be involved in this evolution. And this is just a pictorial representation of how we're evolving so far. And the square box, you can't really move a square very well. We're starting to round out the edges, and we're hoping to actually have a system that is able to continue to move and evolve. But when we're all in a square box, it's kind of impossible to move. So when you look at it from a primary care point of view, the way it's felt, especially before the days where the health authorities were working on things such as the integrated system of primary care, the various initiatives that some of you may have heard of over the years, integrated health networks, IPCC, and the GPs were all isolated in their own little circles. The health authority on the other side has boxes of clinics or primary health care services, public health, various things, home and community care, but it was like there was a solid dividing line between the two. So, and I don't believe it's like that now. But that's what it felt like just a few years ago. So it's like two separate systems in one space. Disjointed care, patients disappearing from the GP's view when they entered health authority services, health authority service providers having difficulty actually reaching GPs. So over the last few years, things have started to improve. So the dotted line around those little blue circles represents the divisions of family practice, helping the physicians kind of come together in more of a unified way. The dotted lines around the health authority services is some of the integration the health authorities have attempted, you know, to do. And then the dotted line, instead of a solid line, represents that information relationships are starting to flow more, and that yellow circle is the shared space that we're hoping to expand. So that's kind of where we are now. Linkages are improving, but it still feels often like two separate systems. So where we're going and where we're almost at is supporting physicians in their practices to be more linked with other providers, having the family practices through taking on the attributes of a patient medical home, be able to be in a position to actually be able to link with a system that hopefully is evolving to be able to link with the family doctor office. So things are expanding, linkages are improving, we still have a way to go. Through partnerships, we can develop resources together, because I don't think we've heard through either the federal health accord or through the recent budgetary talks that there's a lot more money flowing into the system. So somehow, together, we have to figure out how to resource this so it works. And one of the ways to do that will be to better link the services. So here's the poor, baffled patient. You know, there's policies, procedures, silos, and bureaucracy in the way. And all of us have the ability to shift something within our sphere of influence. So we want to move to more integrated system of care. And in the community, we're really feeling a synergy in that way. We're feeling things have come together in terms of policies. The Ministry of Health has expressed a policy that supports the patient medical home as being the foundation for integrating the system in the community. The GPSC is realigning their services and resources to support this. The health authorities are being challenged to integrate their services to better link with the patient medical home. We have an opportunity. So we've talked about the patient medical home as an enabler for physicians. We've talked about shared care as linking the GPs and the specialists. And remember, I'm presenting you not a complete picture. I'm presenting you the picture from the viewpoint of what's happening in the collaborative committees to help you round out your perspective of what's possible. And we know we want to link within the broader system. So here's the fully integrated system of primary and community care. That black line is gone now. The health authority physician services are linked. And GP practices, by working together, are able to provide the scope of services that patients need. Health authorities are coming to help to support physician practices. And specialist practices and networks so that for patients, they can get the care they need as much as possible within the community and, of course, linked with the acute care that they need as well. So these are just some of the partners. The practice support program we already mentioned, a GP for me we already mentioned. And we want it to seem like one system of care. So when we think about this, on a community level, we have to define what it means. So I've kind of given a high level, what does it mean conceptually? But it's up to each community to figure out what it means in the community, within the parameters of a framework. So we know that things look different whether you're from a rural, remote, urban, or suburban community. And all of you touch these various communities, and there's different realities and different perspectives. In some way, the rural communities are way ahead of us because things are simple. The relationships exist. And what we're trying to do in the bigger communities is recreate that. And we're hoping IT can help that. What does it look like at a practice level? So in a practice, this triangle is kind of a different take on the blue matrix that you've all seen. But consider this as a family doctor practice. So you have a variety of needs that the patients have, from being relatively healthy patients who just need to pop in episodically, to patients with chronic care conditions, to patients who have complex care conditions, to patients who are part of the key priority populations that truly need a really in-depth, specialized level of care. So when you look at the pretty healthy patients, what they need is to know that they can get an appointment when they need one. They can get access. Access is their main goal. When you look at patients who have some kind of chronic care condition, they want to know that they can get the longitudinal care they need within their family practice. So most of that can probably still be provided by the family doctor, but the family doctor benefits and the patient benefits by having a team available to help with the care. Like if you think of a diabetic patient, for instance, having a nurse they can talk to who can go into more depth about their diet and their lifestyle issues. Then when you go to the complex care patients, most of the care can still be provided within the physician practice, but they need to know that the care is coordinated for them. So they need to know that if they're seeing specialists, health authority, interprofessional teams, that in a sense they're a virtual extension of the doctor's office, and it still appears to them like seamless care. When you get to the key priority populations, this still has to be linked with the doctor's office, but the patient may actually be receiving most of their care elsewhere. So when we look at an integrated system of care at the primary level, the circle represents kind of the primary care home, the fact that the patients are getting most of their care within the family doctor's office supported by a team. And then the key populations are able to link effectively. So what does this look like ideally from the patient's point of view? So we've mentioned that right now the health authorities are working on the three main specialized areas, and now the cancer care has been included: mental health, frail seniors, and surgery. But the patient wants to know that the paths and information lead to and from their patient medical home. They want to know their family doctor knows the whole story of the care. They don't need to worry about where they are in multiple lineups and waiting lists. They want things to be linked: their records, their care plan, and their care providers. Patients need the security of knowing that we're talking to each other, that we know what's happening to them as they journey through the healthcare system. So, as we've said, change to more integrated care takes all of us. It takes everyone. And I believe we can all be part of this. So we all need to break down the barriers, because there are many. We need to create capacity. There's patients who are not getting the care they need right now. We need to simplify things as much as possible. And this is what scares me. Sometimes I get baffled, and I'm in the system. So if simplicity is one of our overall goals, we really need to be committed to that. And we need to be supporting physicians and their other providers of providing and coordinating the range of care that patients need. So happy to take questions, and thank you.
Before we get started, I just want to let you know that we asked Brenda to come to talk about the patient medical home. Thank you so much. But she has said she is not technical. So we have also asked Carol Rimmer, our Director of Technology at the Doctors of BC, who works very closely with Brenda. So if you ask her anything, she can look with big doe eyes at Carol, and Carol can help out as well. So she's just going to sit up here, and I'll turn it over to Paul.
Thanks. That was great, Brenda. You know, it's not a question, just a comment. I want you to be my doctor. I think that style, that was lovely, wasn't it? So, you know, the point is that I think that what I'm getting from this is that as a GP sitting in front of a patient, you know, life is quite different to the experience that we have here. And that's the point of the question I was asking earlier. Your needs as a family doctor are probably simpler than we appreciate. And I think we could do a better job of really understanding the actual needs that exist within a practice. And the point of the question was, I wonder if we actually make it a little bit too complicated when we try and solve those problems. Because right now in Vancouver Coastal, when Betty does her talk, you'll realize that we've got a very complex project trying to link all of these information systems, because we as a system created those silos. We created the conditions that prevents us from sharing information in the first place, and now we're trying to solve it. So it's more of a comment than a question. But any questions for Brenda from the floor? Alan.
I always cause trouble at these meetings, but I want to speak purely from a patient perspective. Through the passage of time, I'm actually moving closer and closer to the health system. These things just happen. And I've been healthy most of my, almost all my life up to now as well. I just wanted to make an observation, and you don't have to answer this question, but from my perspective as a patient, an aging patient who's probably looking forward to some interesting times in the future, and we look at the fact that 80% of care is delivered by primary care physicians. My wife is one of them, by the way. What percentage of the total health spending in Canada is focused on that group? That's a great question. And that's why I'm thinking of joining the Canadian Association of Retired Persons, where the boomers get a bigger booming voice in a political scene, because I think being starved of resources is a serious problem in different parts of the health system, and it appears to me that a huge proportion of capital spending, at least, is focused on a subset, a much smaller portion of the health system than primary care.
Yeah. Therein lies the challenge. You know, the more complex the care needs are and the sicker the patients are, the more expensive their care is. So it's the balance between resourcing adequately the acute care that we all need and value, but ensuring that on the basis of that is the strongest primary care system we can possibly have, because that keeps patients healthy longer and decreases their hospital stays. We know this both from international data, local data, Canadian data. Like, for instance, there's a nurse in Fraser Northwest that's been linked with the Division of Family Practice there. And the physicians can access her for their patients when their patients are frail at home and can't get out to see the doctor, but the physician can't necessarily leave their practice to see the patient. So they can actually call on this nurse to do a house call on their behalf. There have been, I think it's something like 460 patients touched by this nurse. And when they compared their healthcare utilization for the year before they were part of the system and the year after, there was a decrease of ER visits compared to their previous to post of 500 visits, potentially less, and 10,000 bed days. So we know this. We often can't get the data to actually prove it. That's where you can help as well. Like our residential care, and this is nobody's fault, it's just an observation. We have a quality improvement framework set up for the residential care program that the GPSC is operating in, like I say, hundreds now of facilities, and have been trying to get data for 18 months and have not been able to. Hopefully we will soon.
I can just make a comment, just a quick one in response to Alan's point. It may not be, Alan, about putting more money into primary care, but it may be something similar around where the money flows from and to. So for the NHS, for example, has taken the view, as you're probably aware, that instead of flowing the money from government to acute care and then government to primary care and government to all the other sectors of the system, generally speaking, and oversimplifying this to the point of failure, is that money flows from government to primary care and then, in response to the patient's needs, flows to where else it needs in the system. So that's another way of doing this. There's several ways of doing this, but at least it makes sure that the patient's hub of care is properly resourced. Any more questions? Doug?
Doug, meet Brenda.
Brenda, thanks. That was an excellent overview of the GPSC for me, coming from the specialist side of things. But I would also like to say, I don't think we're actually that different.
No.
I've been in practice for quite a long time, and two things. One is the picture you show, which is the web of care, was the picture that Yoel was starting to build as well. And I'm really pleased to see that we're moving in that direction, that we're getting away from the silos and the hierarchical and who talks to who, and that it's a network. I think that's really, really valuable. I was at the IoT Healthcare West at Richmond, whenever that was, early this month or last month, and one of the speakers got up and said, hospitals as we know them today will cease to exist. There'll be critical care like ICUs only. Everything else will be in the community. And then somebody else got up and gave a lovely talk about how family practice as we know today will cease to exist. Everything as we know it today will be home care. And so now we don't have hospitals and we don't have family practice. And then the lady who talked about home care, who researched home care, got up and said, home care is a failure. The quality of care was poor. The number of patients looked after was much smaller than anticipated. And it was way more expensive than they thought it would be. So what are we going to be left with? So anyway, in terms of the issues of IT, from an IT perspective, your office and my office and the operating room are just the content of a field for that patient that says location. And otherwise, to the patient, it's totally irrelevant. So if you come back and think about it as the data, when you're in your office and you're looking at information about the patient's medical data set that in the background is the same for you as it is for me. It's just the quality, the quantity, the format, the frequency, and the layout of the same set of information that you want to look at for your practice is what I want to look at for my practice. And I think that's the issue for the IT and the information management side of things, as opposed to the clinical practice side of things.
And can I say, from a real point of view, these things make a tangible difference. So if when I'm sitting in my office talking to my patient who saw a consultant yesterday, and I actually have the report from the consultant that I can refer to, and that happens now, how much that increases the confidence of the patient that they're actually being cared for. So it's not about information, it's about care. And when the patient knows that the pieces of the system are talking to each other, I mean, the most ideal is that I actually know Doug and I call him when I need to. But if Doug has just done surgery on my patient and I can read the OR report and talk to my patient about it without talking to Doug, the patient still feels that we have a relationship and we're working together to care for them. So I think that's how IT, that's one of the ways IT can really bolster the non-tangible aspects of what we're trying to achieve.
Relationships are important, critical, aren't they? But we often hear folks say it's really important to create a medical record that is owned by the patient.
Mm.
Now, it's interesting because you mentioned the shared care plan, which the patient may well be a participant to. But how important is it in terms of priorities that we actually shift our ownership of the medical record into the hands of the patient from your point of view, speaking as a family doctor?
Yeah, and you know what? I don't know yet, but I'm getting more suspicious that that's the only way to go. But that's not officially where the system is right now. So it kind of makes sense, though. What that looks like, though, how that works, I'm not sure. I don't know, Carol, if you have thoughts on that.
I don't think any of us know right now.
Yeah.
No, we don't.
Shandy, so right now what we have is a system that we need to optimize. We need to optimize the linkages, et cetera. But ultimately, you know, what is that going to look like? And the ultimate empowerment of the patient is a record that they are able to access.
At least have access to. And they'll find all sorts of errors in it, won't they? Shana had a question.
Yeah, to me it sort of seems like there's a disconnect between the policies that are written and the all of what everyone's saying and the funded initiatives that are actually kind of happening. Because, you know, if I put on my patient perspective, there are a lot of touch points to IT solutions now that a patient has. I can go into my eHealth and I can get my lab results and some documentation if I happen to go to certain facilities that are sending those things, and that will become more robust over time. Then I can go, if my primary care office happens to offer a patient portal to my system, which, you know, some do that, then I can go in there and I can see some other information. Some of it's duplicative, some of it's the same. Potentially there's going to be, you know, future initiatives where I can see some wait list information, or I can see where I live on a wait list maybe in the future if there's, you know, something around that in the surgical space, which is what the ministry is indicating for the, you know, improvements to surgical services. Maybe I touch a telehealth service and I'm lucky enough to have that opportunity within. So I'm touching on a number of different instances, IT solutions. Right now, those are all separate strategies and not in alignment to me around, you know, what's that hub, what's that overarching, how are we bringing all these things together? So I think that's the challenge and that's sort of the next step. Obviously, we need some of these foundational bases that we can actually link to before we can get there. But I do think that that's what, to me, as I cross through all these different, because I come work for the clinical informatics space right now, so I cross all these different initiatives and I see all these things happening and I'm like, none of this seems to really like really hold the patient perspective. Everyone thinks they hold the patient perspective and they do within their initiative. Everyone's putting the patient first, absolutely, but then that cross continuum patient perspective I feel is what's really missing.
Yeah, what will this evolve into ultimately, and what is the ultimate shared vision and strategy? We're only just starting to talk, really.
Mm-hmm. 3 minutes, okay.
Mm-hmm. The voice of the patient.
It does in some countries.
Good glass half full, or the glass filling up perspective. That's a good one. Any more questions for Brenda?
Can I make just one quick comment?
Sure.
I actually, what I want is a patient-centered record that I trust all my providers have access to, whether or not I ever even look at it or even understand it. To me, having it focused on me, but if I want to look at it, maybe I will, maybe I won't. It depends how ill I am, and if I feel fine, I probably don't bother. So I think what's important is a logical cluster of this information that is focused on me, that I can trust the providers to have access to, rather than me accessing it myself or carrying it on my phone. I don't think I want to do that.
Thanks. You know, no one asked a question about privacy, which I'm amazed and almost relieved about.
I got one
about
at the back here. Just hang on 2 seconds.
And we've done that once to death, and it's not dead yet. But just one final. Oh, so there's a question at the back?
Well,
sorry.
It's not a question, but I just want to echo that comment of Alan. I have an 85-year-old mother, and she doesn't really want to access any electronic health record, and she wants to know that she goes to her GP and that GP has access to all that information and can provide whatever feedback she needs or any care advice that she needs. But she doesn't want to, and I have access to some of that stuff, but I also don't want to have to go to all these 10 different touch points and put it all together and then go to the GP and say, you know, she had this here and she had this here, and it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. So I want to echo that comment that really we need the GP to have that access. The other point I wanted to make as well was you talked about the family, the GP having that overall care for the patient. I think a lot of it is also then on capacity. So it's not only hard to get in, but you have a 15-minute appointment if you're lucky.
Exactly.
And yes, they may have access to all this information, but they've got to sift through it and they've got to understand it and connect the dots and then communicate it to the 85-year-old person who doesn't understand everything, you know, the first time you say it. So that's another aspect that we also have to look at. So it's not just the IT helping, but what Yoel said about the clinical transformation of how we practice as well.
Yeah, thanks. If I can comment, I'm hoping that gone will be the days of the patient presenting to the office with their binder in hand because they don't trust that anyone's holding the pieces together. And that's not a great scenario. When you talk about the 10-15 minute appointment, bang, 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 exactly, we have to change what that looks like. And I believe, and I think we believe, that only through being part of a team will that actually change, where we're all contributing to care, and it's not all on the one provider.
So thank you, Brenda. That was a great talk. Thank you very much.
And Kate or Candace, are you going to say a few words before we take a quick break here? Thank you.
Very much for the amazing presentation. So everyone, if you look at your table, you should have this form in front of you. It's the evaluation form. Your feedback will be extremely valuable for us. We want to hear from you and learn from you. So please fill a few minutes to fill it up. And we are so eager to hear from you. So we made a new rule this year. Only if you fill up the form and hand it back to us, otherwise you are not qualified for the door prize draw today. Okay. And also the 2017-18 BCHIMS board nominations in progress already. So if you have any questions or very interested to get involved more with BCHIMS, please come talk to Kate, our past president.
So if you have talks, if you have suggestions of people that you think could contribute to the board, we're looking for some help with that. So put your thinking caps on, send me an email, grab me today. It would be much appreciated. Thanks.
So now we have 50 minutes for coffee break. See you in 50 minutes.